Ghana. Donald Byrd on trumpet, of course. Hank Mobley on tenor sax. Duke Pearson, piano. Doug Watkins on double bass. And Lex Humphreys on drums. This is Lead Stories. I'm Yatrice Lead, and it is Monday, July the 22nd. And since we last talked, there's been an epiphany of sorts in the White House. Seems the president has come to a conclusion about his identity as a black man. It is so gratifying. But he at least dates it. That part of his blackness he dates to 35 years ago. So he has gone post-racial since then. Look, you know, I was wondering whether something was wrong with my ears, or because I listened to the speech and I didn't find a need, as many people did, to wax philosophic and, you know, just pretty much break out the Kleenex because they thought the president had done a magnificent thing in the speech, and it was so personal, it was so iconic, it was so extraordinary, it was so groundbreaking and great emotion and all of that they were talking about. But, you know, I heard an entirely different message. So guess what? We are going to start the week off just right. We're going to do a little media literacy work today and tell you what's going to happen. We're going to listen to that speech. And we're going to listen to it quite critically. And you will hear what you will hear. We'll discuss about it. We'll discuss it after the speech. But here's the thing. You, of course, know by now you are to pay attention to the environment of the speech, not just the physical environment, but what is going on. The speech is being made in the aftermath of the verdict of not guilty for George Zimmerman in the killing of Trayvon Martin last year, February 26th. And the environment is also literally in the middle of huge national upheaval about this and great discussion going on. So people were probably asking, well, where's the president? Where is he on this thing? And he put it off and put it off. And on Friday the 19th came this so-called unscripted moment, and we will now listen to it. It's a sizable clip. It's about 15 minutes. I kind of took a minute or two away. But let's listen to it, and I want you to really understand, really listen hard, because it is an amazing thing that we will find out what he said, what he meant, and what people seem to believe that they heard. So let's hear President Barack Obama and his speech on Friday the 19th. Here we go.
A little bit. First of all, I want to make sure that once again, I send my thoughts and prayers as well as Michelle's to the family of Trayvon Martin, and to remark on the incredible grace and dignity with which they've dealt with the entire situation. I can only imagine what they're going through, and it's remarkable how they've handled it. The second thing I want to say is to reiterate what I said on Sunday, which is there are going to be a lot of arguments about the legal issues in the case. I'll let all the legal analysts and talking heads address those issues. The judge conducted the trial in a professional manner. The prosecution and the defense made their arguments. The juries were properly instructed that in a case such as this, reasonable doubt was relevant, and they rendered a verdict. And once the jury's spoken, that's how our system works. But I did want to just talk a little bit about context and how people have responded to it and how people are feeling. When Trayvon Martin was first shot, I said that this could have been my son. Another way of saying that is Trayvon Martin could have been me 35 years ago. And when you think about why, in the African-American community at least, there's a lot of pain around what happened here. I think it's important to recognize that the African-American community is looking at this issue through a set of experiences and a history that that doesn't go away. There are very few African-American men in this country who haven't had the experience of being followed when they were shopping in a department store. That includes me. There are very, very few African-American men who haven't had the experience of walking across the street and hearing the locks click on the doors of cars. That happens to me, at least before I was a senator. There are very few African-Americans who haven't had the experience of getting on an elevator and a woman clutching her purse nervously and holding her breath until she had a chance to get off. That happens often. And I don't want to exaggerate this, but those sets of experiences inform how the African-American community interprets what happened one night in Florida. And it's inescapable for people to bring those experiences to bear. The African-American community is also knowledgeable that there is a history of racial disparities in the application of our criminal laws, everything from the death penalty to enforcement of our drug laws. And that ends up having an impact in terms of how people interpret the case. Now, this isn't to say that the African-American community is naive about the fact that African-American young men are disproportionately involved in the criminal justice system, that they're disproportionately both victims and perpetrators of violence. It's not to make excuses for that fact, although black folks do interpret the reasons for that in a historical context. They understand that some of the violence that takes place in poor black neighborhoods around the country is born out of a very violent past in this country, and that the poverty and dysfunction that we see in those communities can be traced to a very difficult history. And so the fact that sometimes that's unacknowledged adds to the frustration. And the fact that a lot of African-American boys are painted with a broad brush and the excuse is given, well, there are these statistics out there that show that African-American boys are more violent. Using that as an excuse to then see sons treated differently causes pain. I think the African-American community is also not naive in understanding that statistically, somebody like Trayvon Martin was probably statistically more likely to be shot by a peer than he was by somebody else. So folks understand the challenges that exist for African-American boys. But they get frustrated, I think, if they feel that there's no context for it, and that context is being denied. And that all contributes, I think, to a sense that if a white male teen was involved in the same kind of scenario, that from top to bottom, both the outcome and the aftermath might have been different. Now, the question for me, at least, and I think for a lot of folks, is where do we take this? How do we learn some lessons from this and move in a positive direction? I think it's understandable that there have been demonstrations and vigils and protests, and some of that stuff is just going to have to work its way through as long as it remains nonviolent. If I see any violence, then I will remind folks that that dishonors what happened to Trayvon Martin and his family. But beyond protests or vigils, the question is, are there some concrete things that we might be able to do? I know that Eric Holder is reviewing what happened down there, but I think it's important for people to have some clear expectations here. Traditionally, these are issues of state and local government. The criminal code and law enforcement is traditionally done at the state and local levels, not at the federal levels. That doesn't mean, though, that as a nation, we can't do some things that I think would be productive. So let me just give a couple of specifics that I'm still bouncing around with my staff. So we're not rolling out some five-point plan, but some areas where I think all of us could potentially focus. Number one, precisely because law enforcement is often determined at the state and local level, I think it would be productive for the Justice Department, governors, mayors, to work with law enforcement about training at the state and local levels in order to reduce the kind of mistrust in the system that sometimes currently exists. When I was in Illinois, I passed racial profiling legislation, and it actually did just two simple things. One, it collected data on traffic stops and the race of the person who was stopped. But the other thing was it resourced us training police departments across the state on how to think about potential racial bias and ways to further professionalize what they were doing. And initially, the police departments across the state were resistant, but actually they came to recognize that if it was done in a fair, straightforward way, that it would allow them to do their jobs better and communities would have more confidence in them and in turn be more helpful in applying the law. And obviously law enforcement's got a very tough job. So that's one area where I think there are a lot of resources and best practices that could be brought to bear if state and local governments are receptive. And I think a lot of them would be. And let's figure out, are there ways for us to push out that kind of training? Along the same lines, I think it'd be useful for us to examine some state and local laws to see if they are designed in such a way that they may encourage the kinds of altercations and confrontations and tragedies that we saw in the Florida case, rather than diffuse potential altercations. I know that there's been commentary about the fact that the Stand Your Ground laws in Florida were not used as a defense in the case. On the other hand, if we're sending a message as a society in our communities that someone who is armed potentially has the right to use those firearms, even if there's a way for them to exit from a situation, is that really going to be contributing to the kind of peace and security and order that we'd like to see? And for those who resist that idea that we should think about something like these Stand Your Ground laws, I just ask people to consider, if Trayvon Martin was of age and armed, could he have stood his ground on that sidewalk? And do we actually think that he would have been justified in shooting Mr. Zimmerman, who had followed him in a car, because he felt threatened. And if the answer to that question is at least ambiguous, then it seems to me that we might want to examine those kinds of laws. Number three, and this is a long-term project, we need to spend some time in thinking about how do we bolster and reinforce our African-American boys. And this is something that Michelle and I talk a lot about. There are a lot of kids out there who need help, who are getting a lot of negative reinforcement. And is there more that we can do to give them a sense that their country cares about them and values them and is willing to invest in them? I'm not naive about the prospects of some grand new federal program. I'm not sure that that's what we're talking about here. But I do recognize that as president, I've got some convening power. And there are a lot of good programs that are being done across the country on this front. And for us to be able to gather together business leaders and local elected officials and clergy and celebrities and athletes and figure out how are we doing a better job helping young African-American men feel that they're a full part of this society and that they've got pathways and avenues to succeed. Yeah, I think that would be a pretty good outcome from what was obviously a tragic situation. And we're going to spend some time working on that and thinking about that. And then finally, I think it's going to be important for all of us to do some soul searching. There's been talk about should we convene a conversation on race. I haven't seen that be particularly productive when politicians try to organize conversations. They end up being stilted and politicized, and folks are locked into the positions they already have. On the other hand, in families and churches and workplaces, there's the possibility that people are a little bit more honest, and at least you ask yourself your own questions about, am I wringing as much bias out of myself as I can? Am I judging people as much as I can based on not the color of their skin, but the content of their character? That would, I think, be an appropriate exercise in the wake of this tragedy. And let me just leave you with a final thought, that as difficult and challenging as this whole episode has been for a lot of people, I don't want us to lose sight that things are getting better. Each successive generation seems to be making progress in changing attitudes when it comes to race. Doesn't mean we're in a post-racial society. It doesn't mean that racism is eliminated. But, you know, when I talk to Malia and Sasha, and I listen to their friends and I see them interact, they're better than we are. They're better than we were on these issues. And that's true in every community that I've visited all across the country. And so, we have to be vigilant and we have to work on these issues. And those of us in authority should be doing everything we can to encourage the better angels of our nature as opposed to using these episodes to heighten divisions. But we should also have confidence that kids these days, I think, have more sense than we did back then, and certainly more than our parents did or our grandparents did, and that along this long, difficult journey, we're becoming a more perfect union. Not a perfect union, but a more perfect union. All right. Thank you, guys.
Okay, well, there you go. What are we to make of that? 888-874-4888. I am outraged that people saw that as a very positive thing. When you look at what it is the president said, first of all, you would notice how uncomfortable he was about actually dealing with the issue of race. I've never heard a president sound so halting, so unsure, so iffy, so uncomfortable discussing what has been an issue since America began as a country, and even before then. You would notice that he never said that Trayvon Martin was killed. He said he was shot. He was shot. And then called it later on in the speech, we must get over these episodes. They're not an episode. And every time I hear this stuff, it really makes me boil about, you know, the grace and dignity with which people tolerate incredible injustices. And they have to be congratulated for handling it with grace and dignity. I don't want to see anybody being congratulated for grace and dignity when their son or their daughter has been shot down like a dog. Why is that supposed to be some great attribute to have grace and dignity over the fact that your child is murdered? He talks about this was, you know, when Trayvon first was shot, and he ought to know better. He knows that he was killed, slaughtered. This is not, he was just shot and then he got up and walked away and went to the hospital and got himself all tidied up and bandaged up and they set him back on a solid footing a couple of hours later. And then incomprehensibly, as this president is trying to communicate to people, I'm giving it from my heart, you guys. I'm not even reading a speech. I'm telling you honestly how I feel. He talks about everything except what the deal is. Bouncing around some ideas, he says, to work with local law enforcement departments to investigate this and to investigate that. The issue still is exactly the same. This president continues to racialize it even more by assigning every stereotypical attribute to Trayvon Martin. He talks about, while he is being portrayed at the moment that he's giving the speech, he might seem a little biased, but here he is very clear. He has a very clear picture of things because, yes, Trayvon Martin, statistically, he says, he stood a better chance of being shot by a peer than by George Zimmerman. What kind of a thing is that to say? In a clear-cut case that he wasn't shot by a peer, he was shot by a nut. Walking around with an attitude that he has authority to take people's life as if that's what it came to. He's talking about these episodes. Yes, you know, you have your protests and, you know, what else could we get out of these episodes? This is not an episode, Mr. President. If it were your child, you would understand it's not an episode. I've had it going to funerals and meetings and protests time and again over the same thing. And the president himself is saying, while people are not listening, He is saying, don't look to me for the answer. Understand that the federal government in these matters is limited. He already built in the argument, the counter argument. He says of the case, he doesn't refer to it. He says, well, you know, what has happened in here, the trial has been had. The judge did a very competent job, and the prosecutors argued their case, and the defense lawyers argued their case, and they issued a verdict. And he stands for the jury process and all of that nonsense. This is not about the jury and its process and the trial and the court. This is about the fact that the prosecutor committed prosecutorial misconduct, possibly involving even a judge, and certainly involving the police at the station house the very night. And if you want to be of use as a president with all the leverage you have, with your awesome powers, because you are a convener, you said, convene a federal investigative process and target that office. Find out how do you unarrest a man who has been arrested in a homicide. And you let him walk out of the station house and you let him get lost for 44 days while he's immune from prosecution. And how you assign a ridiculously incompetent woman as a special prosecutor in this case, how could it possibly have been justice? The president is talking garbage. And it's really less has to do with the systemic issue and more about his political need to be politically correct. There, I'm on the record. Nobody could say I didn't say anything. He's talking about how, yes, you know, we have to do something about these young men who are getting negative messages. That was not the issue in this case. Trayvon Martin had a father. He had a mother. He has a brother. He was not at the time he was shot and killed. He was not involved in any illegal activity except just going to get a snack and going home, minding his business. But the president has to bring in this, literally assigning those attributes to Trayvon Martin. And now, you know, we should assemble a group of people, you know, athletes and celebrities and people like that who can help us get a handle on this. That's not what is needed. Why would you think the answer for this is athletes? What is the answer for your children? Would you let Sasha and Malia be raised by athletes and celebrities? Why is it that young men must have celebrities and basketball players? Mrs. Obama, as you recall, going to Chicago not too long ago on the very same day that the city of Chicago shut down quite a few schools, talked about we have to do something. We, you know, let's make basketball courts. They need libraries. They need schools with drinking water. He's going to come talk this nonsense nationally and still think that he is conning somebody. And people are waxing, oh, they're almost in tears with emotion. The president spoke from his heart. You listen to what he's saying. The Trayvon Martin murder is a backdrop to his opportunity to score points. Well, here's what we could do. What you could do, and what Mr. Holder did not do when Amadou Diallo was shot, your Justice Department could go conduct a probe. Your Justice Department could assign the FBI to investigate this thing. That's what you could do. He wouldn't do it. But that's what he could do. You get up in front of a nation, and that young man is dead. And you're talking about, statistically, yes, on the other hand, he could have been just as well shot by his peers. Who the hell are you talking to? What is the matter with this man? If Trayvon Martin was at the age and could he have stood a ground, that is not the issue. This is not a legal exercise. We're not in court, in law school, our first year of law school, pondering legalities. We are confronted with some serious facts. This young man was on his way home. He was interrupted and he was attacked and killed. You don't have to conjecture anything, but if he did this and if he was to be left alone, how about that as a premise? He was just walking down the street, minding his business. He ends up dead. Now the president, because I suppose he thought he was conducting a legal clinic, a legal class, like he did at the University of Chicago when he was an adjunct there. But this is not a legal exercise. This is yet another young person dead for no reason. And now to talk about this, and you're going to provide the context. Well, if you're going to provide a context, provide the correct one. The context is not race. Race is a permanent thread in the fabric of American life. Don't you understand that, Barack Hussein Obama? Don't you get that? It's a permanent thread. So to bring it up as, into the context of race, let other people deal with that. They have their problems. You should be able to see this thing clearly. You're the head of state. Order the FBI in there. Find out what happened at that station house on February the 26th, 2012. Why did a person come into that station house under police guard in a police vehicle, handcuffed, and then was able to walk out? And who did that? You don't tell me about the jury made a thing and they argued, and who cares about what they did? We're real clear about where this case went wrong. Talking this nonsense to the nation. He spoke from his heart. Look at what kind of trouble this man was experiencing just talking about being black. He could not stitch his words together. He had problems coming before the nation to state the obvious fact. Because emotionally, he himself isn't there. He has to work himself up for it. Talk about bring celebrities and bring, athletes in, and let's see what we can do for America to show that we care about our African-American boys. That's what they have families for, Mr. President. Same like you. That's what you and Mrs. Obama are there for, to raise your children. If you want to help, if you really want to help, you could do something about the 90% unemployment rate of people the age of Trayvon Martin. You could do that. And of their parents. More than twice the rate of the national unemployment average. You can fix that. But that's not what you're talking about. Because now you're in post-racial America. And you've got to give the post-racial message. You're measured and you're just and you're logical and you're thinking right. And in the end, he says nothing. Nothing. But offering your prayers and best wishes and congratulating black people about the dignity with which they handle an indignity. I'm sick of it. I'm going to come with this political sleight of hand, telling us really you are talking through us to white America still. Yes, I'm responding to those people, those colored people. I'm responding to their pain, but I'm going to put it in context. And what is your context? Well, you know, it started, the way this country started was a great deal of violence. The context is very simple. The context is a 17-year-old boy, young man, who leaves his home to go get a snack for him and his little brother to, as they take a break playing it in the house. He doesn't make it back in the house. He is murdered 300 feet from his house. That's the context. You don't need any other context. That's the context. You're going to convene a panel to study things that everybody knows. You're going to convene law enforcement people and you're going to train them. Train them to do what? That's what they're already being paid for, their so-called training. Their training told them that they could arrest somebody and set them free in a homicide. That's what they're trained for. You know, I've listened to this stuff all the time, and I get it. I get disgusted, especially with this president, and I get so frustrated because, state your case. This is where the glaring difference between Barack Obama and Harold Washington. Harold Washington would have told you exactly what the deal was. This president is hemming and hawing, and he's careful, and he's slowing down. He wants to find exactly the right word. He doesn't want to offend anybody. He wants black folks to feel, well, he's kind of nodded in our direction, so we're happy. But at the same time, you know, you can continue, but don't get too violent with your protests and your vigils, he says, for providing that you maintain law and order and whatnot. The issue is not about some damn protest or vigil. A 17-year young man is dead for no reason. That's the issue. That's as far as you need to go. Bouncing around ideas. Bounce around some ideas about getting the FBI, getting a crackerjack team to find out who did what on February the 26th, 2012, in the station house. Who made the calls? Who said it's okay? And why? And surely if you think your children are important to you, Trayvon Martin is important to his parents too. The same president who talks so deeply from his heart is going to be in Chicago talking about how he's going to help the middle class in the same city he came from, where the violence is so great and where the unemployment rate is even greater. He has no prescription for that. Just to make sure that he makes his point, he's going to a private college to give his speech. You see what I mean? You're a man for all the people. They've laid off 2,100 teachers in Chicago. But you are there to talk about your commitment to the middle class. There must be something in the water in Washington, D.C. that makes people kind of lose their brain cells at a rapid rate. So I'm listening to this speech, and the more I listen to it, the more angry I get, because apparently it's just me. All these talking heads on Sunday, Kleenex must have made a real big sale on Sunday. All these people almost near tears. They're so overwrought by the emotionalism of the president and how he spoke from his heart. But he spoke nonsense from his heart. How about that? Telling people things that they don't want to hear, but this silliness about getting athletes and getting celebrities to give black boys a sense of who they are. And that would solve the problem. Unbelievable. You think President Obama, in the aftermath of what happened in Connecticut, the killing of all these children, do you think he would be so brazen as to say, well, yes, this is a very sad situation, but you know, I'd like to convene some celebrities and some athletes and others to see if we could direct the attention of this community, you know, to really connect with the children in this community. They would kick him out of town. Every single stereotype he raised within the so-called context of discussing this question. And the question is so clear. This is the thing that boggles my mind. This is so clear. It is so clear what is wrong here. It was clear when it happened to Amadou Diallo, 41 bullets fired, 19 hitting him. He was literally almost with the foot in his house. The same Eric Holder that is now going to be paying cursory attention to this matter of seeing whether they could bring civil rights charges, the president already told you, he said it in his speech, don't get your hopes up too high. That's a state issue. We don't handle those things. They certainly didn't handle it with Diallo. And I was right there in the room when Mr. Holder said, yes, they're going to do something and take a good look at it. Four cops, all of them walked away. Not one stood any charge. They all walked away. And, you know, yes, it is true. One would say that, you know, basically talking again, using Trayvon Martin to underscore a negative. Yes, you know, that, you know, so many people at Trayvon Martin's age are in prison. Was that the issue here? Was prison the issue here? Did that come into play anywhere in this case? The young man is dead. At least, if you're going to be this erudite, let me put it that way. Okay? If you're going to be this erudite, sound it out to somebody before you go before the nation and try to do one of these sleight of hand things. You know, you look like you're caring, but you're talking your politics, because right away you were able to talk about all the things that you can do. The administration should give a sense of what these young men do. You're the heir number five, Barack Hussein Obama. And you have yet to produce what is necessary for the same constituency you recognize, and you put in context. You talked about the role of poverty and dysfunction that can be traced to a time gone by. No, it's as recent as 10 minutes ago. BBS. You know, people heard me here ranting and raving about the unemployment rate for black teens, but PBS recently did a program, and the estimate was, you know, I was saying well over 80%. It turns out I was conservative. The teenage unemployment rate, as it was said on that program, was well over 95%. 95%! Where on the planet have you heard of a statistic like that? And people are still containing their anger. And you're going to tell people, well, you know, you can be academic and you could think philosophically, and we have these things to open up these discussions, and who the heck cares about discussing about anything right now? We want you to move in the right direction. We gave you permission to do things that you that are well within your power, and you just can't seem to perform. But you show up at this point because it became so embarrassing that everybody had something to say. Look, John McCain just yesterday was talking about these awful stand your ground laws. He wasn't mincing words. He wasn't dancing around it. You're the president and you're, well, and what is the matter with this man? Look, at some point, we have to get very real about Barack Obama. And these things, they look to be the exact opposite of what they really are, which makes it insidious. You know, it's like going, as his wife did again, to Chicago on the very day that they disbursed a check for in excess of $1 million to clear out all those schools and put the contents in a warehouse. And Mrs. Obama says, we have to do something. We have to build basketball courts. Good Lord. There's a black woman with a law degree talking this nonsense. What are we to do with leadership like this? I know I'm taking it personally, and I have no problem telling you that. I take this real personally. Why? Because this president ought to know better. You come out, you want to make a statement about how you really feel, make a statement about how you feel. You don't have to negotiate that. You don't have to apologize for how you feel, and you don't have to mince your words in death. John McCain didn't mince his words. He said what he thought. You know, you're in this kind of a mode. Let me go. Hold me. Let me go. Hold me. Get the nerve to actually be at ease with yourself and with the constituency you allegedly claim to have some kind of a link to. This is a very serious case. It was serious from the beginning. It didn't change with the verdict and the trial, and all of that was just the predictable path that this was going to take. This case was lost right in the station house the very night that George Zimmerman shot and killed Trayvon Martin. I have said so. It remains that way. It has not changed. You had an abysmally unqualified and really horrific special prosecutor, if she calls herself that. She's a not-so-special prosecutor. And arrangements were made early in the game. If you want to be of service as the President of the United States, you panel a crackerjack team and you swarm that office and you don't leave until you get names, until you understand exactly what happened there. Because guess what? That is what happens to almost every black person who comes in the criminal justice system. The fix is in law before they get to court. It could be as trivial as a parking ticket. It could be as serious as a homicide. That's the name of the game. You're going to stand up there as the chief executive of the United States acting like you're naive to all of this. And you're, while you are supposedly empathizing with people, you're telling them why they should not expect too much from you. Because, you know, this is a state matter. You know, I hate to say these things, but Connecticut was a state matter too. And Colorado was a state matter. And you told these people in no uncertain terms, you are going to make it your business to make sure there are changes going on here. You took on the assignment. Here you're talking about Trayvon Martin. Well, you know, there's a thing that's going on about young black men, and you continue to emphasize this and you underscore it so that people who didn't get it before now see the so-called context that you are now providing. Trayvon Martin was not in the criminal justice system, but you put him there. Trayvon Martin was not lacking for parental guidance, but you put that there. Trayvon Martin did not have a gun, but you put the idea there. If he had a gun, what if he had a gun? Would he have some kind of a silly, useless theoretical exercise? The facts are too inconvenient. The facts are already established. Do something with the facts. Do something with the facts. Barack Obama doesn't have the guts, plain and simple, to deal with the facts of this case. He's going to dance around it. He's going to do all kinds of dodging and darting. Imagine that. You're going to have a national conference to tell America what Trayvon Martin was not. And yes, he stood, equal chance of being killed by a peer. What kind of a stupid remark is that? That's just plain stupid. Because the facts are so different and they are clearly established. A peer did not shoot him. And you would never say that he was killed. You can't bring yourself to say he was killed. Not even to say he was killed, far less to say you thought he was murdered. You called it an episode. An episode. Imagine that. And he was shot the night he was first shot. You know, this president, sometimes I wonder whether it could be arranged for us to just be in a soundproof room at the same time. Just give me Barack Obama and a good hour in a soundproof room. That man deserves a good old-fashioned 36-cent Brooklyn butt-kicking. That's what he needs. What is this nonsense that he's talking about? And the media is so insidious. They understand all this, but they glam onto it because, hey, the guy is giving us a way out. Let's take it. Let's run with it. So they will congratulate him about the fact that he has discovered something that we knew about him all along. It reminds me of a friend. I'm going to tell you the story before I hang up. Arranged this big lunch, a private lunch. And what is the lunch for? Well, you know, I just needed to let you know that I'm gay. I said, so that's the lunch? You're the only one who didn't know. He says, you knew? My God, you're the only one who didn't know. We all knew. Forget it. We got that a long time ago. Same thing with Barack Obama. We get you. We get you, Mr. President. We really do. And it's unfortunate that in a situation like this, the leadership that you could have shown, the extraordinary leadership that you could have shown here, would have been immediately to just swarm that office and somebody get some names. Who did what, when, why, and how? Give me numbers, give me names, give me times of day. Because we're coming in, because that is where the federal government could be at least useful. The fix is always in for young black men like Trayvon Martin. Well, I've blown your eardrums, I'm sure, to smithereens today, but I was so livid watching this thing, I tell you, it drove me nuts. Because the man is actually insulting. He's actually incriminating Trayvon Martin all over again, associating him with all these negative stereotypes without really addressing the central issue. But anyway, we'll be talking because, you know, we have our one day a week. We have to sit down and talk a bit. But we have some news to catch up on tomorrow, so do make it a point to be here and tell your friends. There's a crazy woman on PRN.FM, and every now and then she goes off. So tune in and see if this is going to be the day she goes off. I want to thank you so much for being here with me and for allowing me to just ventilate like this, because really, I had enough of it. And I'll return to semi-normal state tomorrow, and we should be here to talk about other serious things. And as we continue to watch this case, and the aftermath of it, of course, there's so much more to come with this case. All right, that's it for me. Stay tuned. Richard Martin comes up next. You want to keep it right here. And you can reach me on Facebook at Lead Stories. With Eutrice Lee, or write me a note at gmail, leadstories@gmail.com. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.